Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by
Charles Bernstein,
who is the composer behind A Nightmare on Elm Street, which came out in 1984, actually the year I was born, so that gives a little context. But if that probably drives you crazy thinking about that. But anyway, you know, it's such an iconic character in Freddy Krueger, but I insist that, you know, I don't think it would have been as, you know, nearly as scary without your, you know, nightmarish music. So we're really happy to have you on here. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I like to do these things sort of, you know, chronologically a little bit of your journey. So, you know, take me all the way back to the beginning. You know, when you were growing up, I know you were born in Minneapolis in 1943. Who were you? What music did you grow up listening to? Or, you know, did you watch any horror movies or any movies back then? You know, what were your like cultural touchstones as a kid?
Well, you know, I have to say that my mom played the piano in the house a lot. And that was kind of the first sounds I heard were really good piano playing by a woman who was very musical. And as fate would have it, and I didn't learn this till well into my career, when she was young, she was actually accompanying silent movies. She was playing the piano in Minneapolis. Actually, she played the Wurlitzer organ, accompanying silent movies. So in a way, she was doing what I do way before, but then talkies came in, and she was just a girl when she was doing this. She was 17, turning 18. And talkies came in, and she didn't have a gig anymore. And I never heard about her having done that until well into the career that I ended up following.
That's so cool that I had no idea your mom was playing for, I don't know, Nosferatu. And she might have been playing some Lon Chaney movies or something.
So neither you nor I knew this. So, yeah.
That is so, so cool. All right, cool. So maybe you have it a little bit in your blood a little bit.
Could be.
All right. So then I guess we could say you start taking it a little more seriously as a career. You know, you study at Juilliard and University of California. Bridge that gap for me. How did you start going from doing it in college to getting that? I know you did the Oscar winning doc Czechoslovakia in 68. Yeah. So how did that, you know, first break into the biz happen?
You know, Jason, like so many things, I didn't say, oh, I think I'll become a film composer. It sort of evolved. I was at UCLA, interested in music, interested in theater. When I was in New York, I was a big fan of musical theater and telling stories where music was a main part of the storytelling. So, you know, that was my tendency. But then I got offered this little documentary film about Czechoslovakia, about which I knew nothing. And it was an all music film, and it ended up winning an Oscar. And that gave me a lot of credibility here in Hollywood. And, you know, one thing led to another. Oh, here's another documentary. Here's some other things. And over a period of time, I just kind of started doing it. So, you know, now I'm 130 films later, you know, and still just one foot in front of the other. Here's a film, let's write music, you know.
I love it. So you're in LA, you know, you just scored the documentary. It's won an Oscar, so you're starting to get a little attention out there. When do you remember first seeing or hearing about Wes Craven? I mean, he'd done Last House on the Left in 72. Yeah. Which I believe was that like our takeoff on the Bergman movie too?
Well, you know what? Yeah, I'll be completely honest with you and with your listeners. I had not been much of a horror film person. I didn't know who Wes Craven was. And my agent said, you know, you should meet this guy. He's really smart. He's a good guy. And I didn't know his work. I didn't know Last House. I didn't know any of these things. And frankly, it wasn't something I would go to the movies and plunk down some money to see a horror movie. I found life fairly horrifying. and the thought of paying money to have more horror didn't seem like something I wanted to do. And also, I was a big fan of movies that were, you know, more feel good. I loved musicals and all of that. So when I met Wes Craven, I had to say to myself, here's a guy, he's very smart, but what he does for a living is he scares people. And he's asking me to be a big part of that. And I thought, well, okay, let's give this a go. And I realized that maybe my biggest advantage was that I didn't know a lot of horror movies. And I could only go on what scared me. If this music scared me, then okay, maybe that'll scare other people, rather than listening to other horror movies and copying what they did. So maybe it was an advantage in that way.
Right. But hadn't you done some horror before, like The Entity and Cujo?
Yeah, there's a history. Let me think. I think Elm Street came before. There were three of them in a row, you know, around the same time. And with all of them, actually, Cujo wasn't strictly a horror movie. It was a Stephen King book, but it was more of a disturbing tale,
right?
Especially the way the movie was. It's kind of a family tragedy, family drama with a rabid dog, you know.
Right.
The Entity was supernatural, but Elm Street was like a real horror movie. A lot of blood, a lot of, you know, unnatural, scary stuff going on.
Right.
So, you know, Wes was a great guy to work with on a, you know, kind of what turned out to be an iconic film with an iconic character, Freddy Krueger. And I felt I had to give him the musical aspect of that character. So it was a challenge, and Wes was terrific at kind of helping me through it.
Yeah, so how does that actually, like, you're admittedly not, at the time, weren't a big horror guy. So you get this project, you know, you read the script, you're probably even seeing, you know, you're seeing the film, because before the rest of us, you got to see Freddy Krueger and the young Johnny, seeing a young Johnny Depp and everyone before the rest of us did. What's like percolating through your mind? You're basically seeing Freddy Krueger with these claws, but there's no music to it yet. So, and you just said a few seconds ago, you're trying to come up with a musical, you know, embodiment of that character. How do you get the idea to do that, like, synthesized percussion kind of a thing? It's pretty crazy.
You know, when I approach a film, I like to think that the score that I'm going to write, that the music I'm going to come up with, will be special for that particular movie. You know, that it won't be generic horror music, but it'll be Nightmare on Elm Street music. It'll be music for this character, Freddy Krueger. And you're right, I saw this movie before anyone, obviously. And the first thing I saw was a black and white work print. That's what they called the, you know, in those days, before digital, they would run a black and white cheap copy for the composer and the sound people to work from. And I looked at this guy, Freddy Krueger, and I thought, no, this is too weird. This will never make it. You know, this is not going to be, I don't have to worry too much about what music I write for this, because no one's going to hear it. That was my initial feeling. It was just too out there. And lo and behold, all these years later, you know, he's kind of a cultural icon, Freddy Krueger. And the film is still, you know, shown a lot. And I saw it not that long ago, and I thought it really held up. Very good movie.
Yeah. Talk about the musicology of it a little bit. You know, what instruments did you use in putting that together?
Okay. When I look for instruments, I call them colors, you know, ideas, like a painter, you know, what colors, what palette am I going to use? Certain instruments are better than other instruments at doing certain things, like violins are particularly good at some things, trumpets different, percussion, you know. And so I have to come up with a vocabulary of sounds that scare and haunt and disturb. And synthesizers were fairly new at that time, and they were really good at coming up with scary sounds. The synthesizers were good at creating these sounds. And I guess the palette that I assembled was, I'm playing all the instruments because it was a very low budget situation. And I ended up, you know, being the orchestra. So these new synths and using my voice and then distorting the voice using electronic elements. Companies like Boss that make these guitar pedals were very helpful because I could run my voice or my synthesizers or my piano or whatever through these guitar pedals, which distort them or introduce delays or other sonic aspects that can make it more scary. So I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants and coming up with sounds. And that's how the, you know, the score basically got written.
I love it. It's so eerie. I think of like that boiler room imagery, you know what I mean? Like of the nightmares. It's yeah. Embedded in my brain in our fears.
That's good.
Who was it, you or was it Wes, or who came up with that little, you know, children's ditty, the 1-2 Freddy's coming for you thing?
That was definitely Wes's doing. It was in the script. It was in the film when I arrived. The girls were doing the jump rope and chanting, 1-2 Freddy's coming for you. And that is actually written in the script. 1-2 Freddy's coming for you. 3-4 better lock your door, etc. However, my task was then to write music under that chant, you know, synthesizers and orchestral sounds under the chant that then integrated with this. Da da dee da 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 da, you know, the theme.
Can you do that again?
And the chords are, you know, ba da dee da 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 da. La da da, you know, the chords were kind of minor and creepy, and the melody, you know. So then I had to integrate that with 1-2 Freddy's coming for you, which was, as I say, already there, and you know, create kind of a language that used the nursery rhyme idea and the melody, and integrated them together.
I love it. I'm just geeking out hearing about all of it. I mean, as you said, it pretty much, I think, what, 9 film franchise, maybe?
It became
called, I know New Line Cinema became known as the house that Freddie built. Like, it basically launched a whole studio, and you were a huge part of it. Talk about sort of the legacy in terms of, you know, you, well, not during quarantine, obviously, but in a typical year, you could be walking down the street on Halloween and see random strangers, little kids that were nowhere near even bored, maybe even never even seen the movie, wearing that costume. Like, what does that make you feel when you walk and see a little kid on the sidewalk wearing the costume of Freddy Krueger?
You know, I could never have predicted it. I have Freddy Krueger socks that I saw at, you know, a department store, Macy's or something, and I bought, you know, because there's Freddy Krueger on some socks, you know. And I have a lunch pail that has Freddy Krueger on it, just as little, you know, kind of memorabilia. No, I would never have guessed that little kids would be dressing as him, or that President of the United States, George H.W. Bush, in a speech when he was president, referring to something, I think it was Freddy Krueger economics or something. The first time I heard that back in the day, I thought, oh my God, this guy has found his way into presidential speeches, for God's sake, you know? So yeah, I could never have predicted any of that.
Wow, that's not gonna do it. I just think Dana Carvey doing that. Oh, that's wild. That's wild. That's cool. All right. Well, we got, before you run, I mean, we got to settle the Freddy versus Jason debate. I'm a Jason. You're Freddy. Who would win in a real slasher/off?
Well, you know, when that movie, Freddy versus Jason, was first being planned, a UPS driver came to my door to deliver a package and saw my name and said, did you do the music for Freddy Krueger? And I said, yeah. And he said, did you know there's a Freddy and versus Jason movie being planned? I said, no, I had no idea. So I went in and called my agent and I said, wouldn't it be fun if they hired both me and Harry Manfredini, who did Jason, to both score this movie, and I would contribute the Freddy music and he'd contribute the Jason music. Anyway, never happened, but I thought it would have been a cool idea.
That would have been really cool. The Friday the 13th composer dueling. It would have been, that would have been another versus. That would have been really cool. That might not have happened, but I do know every now and then I'll be watching like a Tarantino movie and I'll see some of your work show up in there. I think it was like Kill Bill, maybe Inglourious Basterds.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm very flattered that Quentin Tarantino has included so much of my music in his films that he's such a master and it's a privilege. So
awesome. Well, before we run, what have you been up to lately? What are you working on next? Anything you want to plug?
Well, you know, I'm doing a series of a number of projects. These are a couple of feature documentaries that I'm really enjoying and that are wonderful movies. But I'm also going to release, I did the sequel to Rosemary's Baby, and Entrada Records, it looks like, is going to release the score after all these years, orchestra and chorus kind of score for, it's called Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
That was a TV movie, right?
Exactly. Good call, Jason. Yeah, it was indeed. The sequel to Rosemary's Baby was made for TV for ABC. It had Ruth Gordon from the original cast, and Ray Milland was in it, and Patty Duke. And it was just a wild. It came out on Halloween back in the day. So I thought it might be fun to reissue that. So I'm working on that and a couple of dance pieces. And so it's been busy over here in spite of the lockdowns and everything.
Wow. The original one's, I think, one of my all-time favorites. But I've never seen the TV movie. And Ruth Gordon, Ray Milland, man, The Lost Weekend. The Lost Weekend is another one of my favorites. So
This may not become one of your favorite sequels.
I don't care. It's just the novelty of seeing it and that you did the music. That'll be enough.
Well, look for the album.
For sure. Well, that's pretty wild, man. You know, admittedly a genre you never really liked. Now, I mean, there's another one, Rosemary's Baby.
yeah, absolutely.
Well, you mentioned that you used to be a fan of musicals. I'm curious, what were some of your favorites?
I absolutely love the classic musicals, all the Rodgers and Hammerstein, all of the Lerner and Lowe, West Side Story, you know, that golden age of really wonderfully crafted Broadway musicals. I just love all of that stuff.
Yeah, that was, from Singing in the Rain, West Side Story, that era was just unbelievable. Did you ever do it? Would you ever want to score a Broadway musical if you got the shot?
I originally, when I was in New York at school and so forth, kind of thought I might go that way, but Stephen Sondheim said and did it all. I think that base is covered. I'm just a big fan, but I don't think I'd really want to. And it's such a precarious long shot kind of world, getting a musical actually mounted and produced on Broadway. So yeah, I don't think I'd be going there.
Oh, Freddy Krueger the musical. That talk about jazz hands. Yeah. The claws.
Well, you know, I did a little hip hop stuff with Freddy Krueger ideas, but yeah, I don't know about Broadway. That would be a stretch.
Wait, what do you mean hip hop ideas? You actually worked on something like that?
Well, a lot of my stuff has been sampled for hip hop. I've got like I think 40 samples out there in various hip hop things. I thought it might be cool to just take the Freddy music and do. In fact, it was last Halloween I started working on that, and then a lot of work came in, and I set it aside. I'm very kind of comfortable with and conversant in the hip hop world. So I thought that might be kind of a cool thing to happen with the right artist, you know?
Well, we got to make that happen. I mean, I can't wait to hear that. I'm sure people would love that. That'd be great.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool.
That would be really cool. All right. Well, let's, let that percolate a little more and let us know when that comes about. That'd be great.
Cool.
All right. Well, hey, you've been generous with your time. I'll let you run here, half hour going. So that's great. Thanks so much. This is an honor talking with you.
Jason, it's been a pleasure. Take care. Stay well.